Next Chapter Podcasts. Hear Shakespeare like you've never heard before.
But thanks to all at once.
Who by next moon?
Thee we invite to see.
Who will be crowned at Scone?
Play On Podcasts are epic audio adventures reimagining timeless tales with award-winning actors. Listen today at playonpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boil and bake.
Eye of newt and toe of frog, pull of bat and tongue of dog.
Talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. On the 500. Talking the 500 until the end.
If you scootily-do when you're with your crew, cocaine, dan-dan-dan, man. Song's Cocaine is by Eric Clapton from his 1977 record Slow Hand. It's also number 325 out of 500 on the 500 with Josh Adam Myers. What's up, Fleece Army? Join the Patreon. We need your money. Patreon.com/the500podcast. We got some new hoodies, new merch coming out. Big thanks to everybody that came to the collective at Snowmass in Colorado, all the new fans, all the people that I met. Big shout out to Sarah. You rule. I had such a great time. Almost didn't make it back. Almost did not make it back in time. My flight kept getting canceled on Thursday, and I made it. Paid $450 to make a $50 spot at the Comedy Cellar. Money, 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 money. All right, y'all. Eric, Sir Eric Clapton. I think he was knighted. We talk really, really in depth about this artist today, and I have a perfect guest to get us through the Gishplooky, the one and only Adam Ferrara. Adam's an incredible comic actor. You've seen him on Nurse Jackie, Rescue Me. He was the host of BBC's Top Gear, has an incredible podcast called the Adam Ferrara Podcast. And this dude might be one of the nicest dudes in comedy. Hands down, we could have talked 4 hours. And I've been trying to get him on for a while, and it somehow worked out that Slow Hand was the record. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms and give us a 5-star rating on Apple and leave us a review. Don't be a dick. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Go to joshadammyers.com for tickets. Speaking of which, I have the goddamn Comedy Jam April 3rd at the Comedy Store for the 50th anniversary of the Comedy Store. It's been around for a long, long time. Love that club. My family, my home. March 21st, I'm doing Shimmy Shimmy Ya at the Comedy Store. April 9th, I am doing a goddamn comedy jam in Connecticut and at the Wall Street Theater. And you can stream it live. Go to wallstreettheater.com for tickets. And then I will be at the Nashville Comedy Festival. I will be at Moon Tower Comedy Festival. I will be doing a Shimmy Shimmy Ya in April at the Comedy Store. Lots of shows. joshadammyers.com. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group run by Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to our website, the500podcast.com. Well, nothing left to say, but here we go with number 325 and me. Slow Hand. Bang, bang, bang. It's by Eric Clapton. Enjoy. So how do you have these connections to all these people?
I had a podcast and I just, you know.
And that's it. Well, there's just like this right here. Yeah. It's like, it's me. This is how I met so many other people.
Yeah, it's like, well, there's a point of the, I guess for me, just when I started doing the podcast, I was like, who do I want to talk to? And these are the people I wanted to talk to. And shit just starts happening. You know, I got a call from a friend of mine, J. Keith Van Stratton, who does a game show called Go Fact Yourself, NPR. He asked me to do it. And the basic premise of the show is you pick out something in pop culture or something you think you know a lot about. Yeah. So I picked out the who's next. So you do the game show. You play against somebody else. A friend of mine, Alicia Coppola, who played my wife on the CBS show, she did it with me. And then at the end of it, she gets an expert to see about her answers, and I get an expert to see about my answers, but they don't tell you who it is. So J. Keith goes, and the expert for the who's next is Glyn Johns. And I went, holy shit, it's you. Josh, I scared the shit out of the poor man. And then they said, we also got Ethan Russell. Holy shit, it's you. So I met them there. This is a 70-year-old dude from England. And I'm yelling. I'm screaming. I'm like George C. Scott and Patton. I read your book, you know, because I had the Sound Man book. So I flipped out and I asked the office to call. I said, do you think Glyn would do it? And he said, he goes, here's his number. Give him a call. And I went, I got Glyn Johns' number. And I called him. I was on the road somewhere and I called him and he goes, hello, mate. And I muted the phone. I went, he called me mate. I flipped out.
Oh, man.
And the best thing was, Josh, he was such a fan of what, of the people he worked with. Because I did a thing on my episode where I just gave him names. Right, because he worked with so many people. I mean, he did Zeppelin One, the Stones.
Yeah,
he did. You know,
the Eagles. Looking through it as we were going through this record. Yeah, I was on the plane.
He did this one. He did. Slowly.
He did. Yeah.
And I asked him. I said, "What about Clapton?" And he went. His eyes went up. You could just see the joy in his face.
Really?
He said, "When Eric plays, it goes from his heart through his fingers. It doesn't go via his brain."
Wow.
That's what he said. And then I got a chance to hang out with Levon Helm before he died. I was up at the Ramble. Because my buddy,
as you do, a summer there.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I was on a TV show. My buddy was on the TV show. Has his house next to him in Woodstock.
Yeah,
John Skurdy, right?
Yeah.
So Skurdy's got the house. He's like, come up. Levon's doing the Ramble, and the Ramble was the show he had at his barn.
Yeah, I heard about that. Legendary.
Yes, pay your taxes, kids. That's why. Pay your taxes. So I went over. We had a nice dinner. It was a winter night. We're walking. We got a little bit of a buzz going. I got a red Solo cup with a touch of bourbon in it, you know, for medicinal purposes. We're walking. The snow is crunching. I'm standing 6 feet from Levon as he's doing the weight.
No way.
Swear to God. I'm this close. And I got to hang. He's telling stories afterwards. He's smoking these camels down to the filter, just telling stories. And I shared that with Glyn. He got excited.
Really?
Because he knew
how special that was and how cool that is. Yeah.
And what a great storyteller is.
Yeah.
So I was so struck by this man, that's this accomplished man. This was right before Get Back came back, the documentary, which he's in and Ethan Russell's in, and they were telling me all kinds of stories about it, and I asked him. It was right before that came out. And he still has that feeling of being in that room. You could see it. It's coming out of him. There's just a joy is the only
way. I can only imagine what that's like to have to look back at your career and see all the people that you've worked with.
Yeah.
When you were just like, I was just this little dude from Britain that never thought, you know, my dad didn't do this and my mom didn't do that. And this is what we had. And look what I've become.
Yeah. I mean, I told him, I said that the art you guys created has been my companion since I've heard it. I've traveled with these things. So these are things I hold dear.
Because this is what I want to get to. Is like, how did this love for music start? I mean, you grew up where?
I grew up on Long Island.
Okay, Long Island. I mean, you got Billy Joel.
Yep.
And that's it. He's a good one.
Blue Oyster Cult.
Okay, yeah, dude. More cowbell for sure. Yeah, dude. I'll throw them in with Billy Joel, the greatest.
Pepe Marcello and the Good Rats.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Big Orange Cone. They're a cover band that I saw at my cousin's bar mitzvah in Nassau.
Yeah. Yeah. What it was for me, it was radio, and there was a weird thing. I had a guitar teacher.
Yeah.
Who really opened my mind for this whole thing.
Okay.
For music, and it was being like the older kids, because music was different then. It carried a message. I missed it.
When is this? Give me like a ballpark.
I was born in 66.
Okay.
Right? So I was born six. So I missed it. It was funny. I was talking about this, and I'm going to drop a name.
Please.
There it is. I had Stevie Van Zandt on my show.
Ah, okay.
Right? And I read his book, and I was bullshitting with him, and he told me that he missed the first generation of rock and roll. you know, Little Richard and all that.
Sure,
stuff.
Yeah.
And the second generation. And what he said about when, I think it was John Landau said, I've seen the future of rock and roll, and it's Bruce Springsteen. Right, that's the famous quote.
Wasn't he also working with him though? And he's just like, it's like a little free promo.
Okay, he wanted a job there. Yeah. We said, okay.
Future is Nickelback. By the way, I'm producing their next three albums. We have a 6-record deal.
So I missed everything. I came into it in my formative years. The Edge was punk, and disco. And disco really didn't... Funk I like, because it's on the one. You know, it's popping on the one.
Yeah.
But disco is that four on the floor beat that didn't really speak to me. Mm-hmm. And punk was the Edge. And I was like, well, look, I know three chords, but I'm not that angry.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting a needle through my face. So that's the thing. If I can do it.
Yeah.
I said, and jam bands bother me too. Look, I don't want to show up for rehearsal. Get the song together. And I'll beat it.
You find the guitar solo going to be 25 minutes long. Yeah. Dude. Just go into the next song. Yeah, okay. We got it.
Wait, I get it. I get it.
I get it.
So I went backwards because I was playing, you know, I got this guitar teacher. And he just opened my mind to all this stuff. And then, did you grow up with the Columbia Record and Tape Club?
Of course, everybody did. So 25 cents, man, you get 10 albums.
25, a penny, you get 10 albums. Oh, was it?
Yeah, okay. By the time I got it, it was 25 cents.
It was a penny. We did.
That was a penny. And you taped it.
Yeah, and you taped it, and then you went and you sold them at the flea market. You sold the albums at the flea market because you taped it. And then you would order more, and when they stopped sending it to your address, you'd send them to your neighbor's address.
Yes.
And then you'd get them, and you'd go to the flea market.
I had done that, yeah.
You had to work to fence stolen shit when I was a kid, kids. Couldn't go on eBay. Had to get in a car.
Yeah. Anybody trying to buy a Blue Oyster Cult record?
Yeah.
Live?
No, don't fear the Reaper.
All right, okay. Don't. It feels like you're fearing the Reaper.
Uh-huh.
Don't fear this. Don't fear.
You
buy
go.
This.
This is all for you.
I bought it for 1/10 of a penny. I'll sell it to you for 35 cents.
You know what the nice thing is when you went down there? If you knew the code, you can get fireworks.
Really?
Tri-County Flea Market on Long Island. It's right by Governor's Comedy Club. You would go there and you'd walk up to one of these guys selling shit. You go, is this all you got?
Yeah.
Is this all you got? You mean, is this it? And it's like, maybe I'm on a break. Meet me outside. You open up the trunk and you get bottle rockets.
Yeah, dude.
Then you put them in the end of a wiffle ball back because it had the hole and then you had a bazooka. You could aim them.
I love that. There's nothing better than getting like something on the side that's not out there. It's like, I love that. There's a cigar lounge in LA right next to the Improv.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the back room.
Yeah.
And I go, is this all you got? You got anything in, you got a back room? And they're just like, come on. Got some Cubans for you.
So he would my guitar teacher would teach me, and I would learn songs before I heard them. Mm-hmm. He taught me Friend of the Devil by Grateful Dead. I never heard the song. I learned how to play it first.
Really?
Yeah. And then he curated one of my halls from Columbia Record and Tape Club.
Really? So he was like, all right, you're going to get this?
He said, get
so
this.
So he schooled you.
This and this, yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
And I was like, this is amazing. And that's where I got, in that hall was The Who, Who's Next.
Okay.
Amazing to me. It was Billy Joel, 52nd Street, The Stranger.
No, oh my God.
Yeah. It was Clapton. It was Derek and the Dominoes. It was Cream, Disraeli Gears, and it was Slowhand.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but the first time I heard him, because I know you're a Beatles freak, so am I.
Love him.
Yeah. So I'm a Beatles freak. So I was listening to, I remember the first time I heard My Guitar Gently Weeps, I went, that's not George, you know, because he wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, no, that's Eric. My guitar, you know, that's Eric Clapton. Get these albums. So I got the albums and I was listening to him and it was different. He was changing, right? And I remember playing him Layla. I was very excited when he came over my house. I was blasting it. And I said, how do I get that sound? What amp is he using to make that sound? He goes, that's not his amp. That's his soul.
Fuck.
And I went, oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it meant. I just knew something was possible. You know? Yeah. Like, I couldn't say, at that moment, the sky opened for me, Josh. No, I just went, holy shit, there's a deeper thing here than a Fender Twin
Reverb. It's the feel.
Yeah.
It's the thing that everybody that I've ever jammed with playing music has said. It's like, you can learn it. You can know it so technically. It's ridiculous, but ultimately it comes down to the feel. Either you have it or you don't. If you don't have it, you might as well just quit your band.
Well, it's feel and it's your tone. It's your feel and your sound. Like I was
sure.
Yeah.
As a guitar player, for sure.
Here comes another name. I had Steve Vai on my podcast.
Oh, I've had... Joe Satriani, his
there
teacher.
There you go, his teacher, yeah. From Long Island.
Is he really?
Carl Place, Long Island.
Oh, maybe he said that, I just
he
was too nervous.
He actually helped me, he helped me with like wanting to do stand-up. I'll tell you what.
Steve Vai or Satriani?
No, just the
both?
Fact. Both? Both of them. And they had nothing to do with it. The fact that they came from Long Island and did something like that.
You were like, I can
was
do
like,
anything.
I was like, well, this guy's from Carl Place. Fuck, I can do something. I'm from Huntington. Yeah. It's almost only a couple stops on the train.
Yeah.
I think it made it, it kind of gave me permission or let me knew it was possible because someone from where I was from did it. Does that make sense?
No, I totally get it.
Yeah.
It's because, Long Island is, I mean, it's right outside of the city, so you're so close to it. So the world is there.
Yeah.
But Long Island also feels like a total, like 1,000 miles away from New York City.
It's a Native American word. It means near the mall.
Rich Jew.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
So when I learned about tone and sound. It's, and Eric and Clapton has that. You know he's playing. He's got that. Eddie Van Halen's got that. Steve Vai's got that.
I think Slash has that. Yeah, I feel like Slash from Guns N' Roses.
Slash will have, he has that high kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a really, you could put on any Guns N' Roses, well, not even just Guns N' Roses, anything he's ever done, and that's the solos always have the same tone.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's what I'm attracted to, just like you were attracted to Clapton.
Yeah. And Pete Townsend, he's got, because the way he plays, like Robbie Krieger, too.
Yeah.
I can hear that. Chet Atkins, Segovia, if you know, he's got it, too.
Did you just, when you started getting into Clapton, were you trying to imitate what he was doing?
Yes.
I mean, and that just kind of
everything I was playing through my guitar, I was screaming for Patty Boyd. That's what I was doing.
We'll talk about her.
Yeah.
We can do it later. No, we can do it now. We'll do it later when we get to Wonderful Tonight. Yeah.
But I was trying to do that. And then I was trying to do Townsend because I love the Who. Because I saw Ethan Russell's pictures of 1973 Who in rehearsal. And Townsend is 14 feet in the air with a Les Paul. And I'm like, holy shit. And he did the windmills and stuff. And I was just like, wow. I didn't understand a lot of the music. When I got older, I understood what he was talking about.
Sure. But as a kid, you're just like, that's
as
so
a
cool.
kid, you're just,
yeah, you don't
just,
even get it.
Just amazed by the whole thing.
Yeah, they're gods.
And then you see the depth of what he was doing. I mean, Who's Next was, you know the story with Who's Next.
I don't.
All right, Who's Next was written to follow up Tommy, another rock opera. It was an opera called Lifehouse.
Okay.
All right, and it was supposed to be this, he couldn't be deaf, dumb, and blind, so he couldn't travel. That was the deal with the Lifehouse opera. So he took his character and he put him in a suit, and he would live pretend life. Basically, what he did was he saw the future. He put the Oculus on his head, and he put an anal spike to get shit in and out of the body, and you didn't move. You couldn't move. You couldn't go anywhere, and that's what it was about. And rock and roll was this subversive algorithm where people would gather in the field at night and try and, try and live a normal life. You know, that's what Teenage Wasteland's about. It's not about getting wasted, it's about wasted opportunity. And they said, I'm out here in the field. I'm far from my meals. I'm off the grid.
I don't know enough about the Who, man.
I know,
that's why I'm doing this. Because it's a band that I'm like, I feel like I should know way more shit.
Well, here's the thing is about that period of time. See, I'm album rock. I come from freewheeling Bob Dylan. By the way, I can respect it and appreciate it. Never really spoke to me.
Yeah. I missed it. I say this all the time on the podcast. I'm doing Bob Dylan so wrong because in this list, I never listened to any Bob Dylan except for, the hits. And they got me starting with his like
newer albums and then going back, which so it's like you're going for these ones that every song is 8 minutes long. Yeah. And it's like it's all about like Jesus and like, well, the devil came down to and it's just
got pancake makeup on.
Oh, it's so long and boring. And I'm like, get to the fucking blood on the tracks, man.
Yeah.
So I listen, I don't hate him.
No, I just don't, I'm not digging him yet. I miss the window of appreciation where he would talk to me. That's
But this is the thing.
Yeah.
When I get to that, I'll be like, oh my God, this other shit, you know, A Time Out of Mind, it's not a horrible record. It's a good record if you hear it after you hear all the stuff at the beginning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was what's cool about your teacher to then give you these, I mean, Derek and the Dominoes.
Great.
You said Cream.
Cream.
And then Slowhand. And was there anything else?
I went on my own and I found Ocean Boulevard. 461 Ocean.
Which, oh fuck, dude, Mainline, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Truth be told, my first Clapton full record besides Unplugged, because I got caught up in that when that came out, and I think everybody did because that was so huge. Yeah. And I never really did like, I knew the hits of Cream, I knew the hits of Derek and the Dominoes. So when we did that record with Mainline, Florida on it.
Mm-hmm.
It like the album was good, but Mainline Florida was like top 10 songs I've heard from doing this podcast.
Yeah.
I fucking love that song.
Yeah.
Well,
you know the story how that album came about, right?
He he was on drugs and then he
heroin stupor.
Yeah.
Heroin stupor. It was just like, you know, he wasn't leaving the house. Actually, Pete Townsend went and got him. That's what the Rainbow concert was. Because he was doing heroin with a woman named Alice, whose father was, I think he was an ambassador to the United States during the Kennedy administration. I think. Anyway.
Means the heroin was good.
Heroin, yeah. means, this isn't shit that was
Alice,
stepped on.
Alice could get the fucking this fire was, heroin.
They were chasing a dragon, big ass dragon.
They found him.
They caught him. So they were living together and he was worried about it and he knew Pete Townsend and he said, I'm very concerned about Eric. And he went to see him and he was very cordial. So Townsend said he didn't want to rescue Eric. He wanted just to stimulate him and get him to do shit. So he put together the Rainbow concert and he got off heroin to do the Rainbow concert.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of got him out of it. Then he went back in again, but then he came out of it again. And then when he came out of it, Stigwood, his manager, already put together the sessions in Miami. He got Tom Dowd. I think it was Tom Dowd who did Disraeli Gears.
Okay.
The guys, because the first Cream album they did in London, and Ahmet Erdogan from Atlantic said, you're kind of wandering. Next one you got to do here in the States. So they said, okay. So they came to Atlantic, which was the home of Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
You know, Booker T, EMGs. Right. It was all those guys, right? So Felix Pappalardi, who produced it, when Tom Dowd, who engineered it, Tom Dowd actually had a sound, and him and Eric became friends there. So Stigwood knew this and got him. Pappalardi was the one that made Strange Brew. Strange Brew is an old blues. It's Hey Lordy Mama, but he changed the words.
And he put it
into like a McCartney-esque pop.
Before you say Pappalardi, I'm like, is that that pizza shop on 42nd?
Yes,
and 3rd?
Pappalardi's. You get the garlic knots.
Yeah, of course.
Oh yeah.
Buy a large pizza,
you get a half a dozen garlic knots for free. Come back.
Come back. What are you doing?
This you got a frequent
Sinatra
pizza.
Sinatra ate here a couple times. That's why that's his seat over there. Yeah, he went to the bathroom.
Yeah. So when he came out of the heroin stupor, it was all set up for him.
So is that record, and because I have this shit here in front of me, but yeah. I feel like you know this. Is that record before or after this? Because this
it's
is
before.
The fifth.
It's before.
This is the fifth record.
The first solo album, you could see him sitting there in the white suit with the black Stratocaster.
Yeah.
Looking like, take the picture, I need a fix. but it had After Midnight, the J.J. Cale song.
Yes.
So there's this. I think it was Ocean Boulevard after that. Then there was two. I'm forgetting what was after that. Oh, One in Every Crowd.
Okay.
I think after One in Every Crowd, he started playing with, he was guesting on people's stuff. And I think it was Slowhand, which was this one.
And so, you know, we're talking about all of this stuff about him. And we're talking about like that first record, because this sounds nothing really like, from everything I know about Ocean Boulevard. I think most of the songs were already written by other artists.
Yeah, he covered Marley. That was the big hit.
He covered Marley. I think Mainline, I know he didn't write that, but that's, I mean, like I said, that's hands down one of my favorite records ever. That song, not the record in particular, but, from this, I mean, how much do you think he changed? Because there's not much of a story behind this album. Like, you know, all I have, and let me do the spiel, is mm-hmm. this is his fifth studio record. It's released in November 1977. It's produced by Glyn Johns, who we've been talking about, and Clapton specifically sought out because of his work with the Rolling Stones and the Eagles. Mm-hmm. Although Clapton and his band were intoxicated nearly all the time when recording. See, that line right there, I thought he was sober after he did.
He was off heroin. He was shit. He was Kennedy drunk. By his own admission.
Really?
Yeah, in his autobiography, he goes, we were shit-faced. And Glyn Johns doesn't like you fucking around in the studio. Keith Richards, in his book Life, called Glyn Johns the designated driver of rock and roll.
Really?
Yeah, because he didn't. He goes, are we here to work?
How old is he when they're working on this? Do you know? I mean, I could look it up.
We got to look it up. I don't know. But he was, at this point, Glyn was doing, you got to realize, he's already been through. He was the engineer on
I mean, it's
My Generation. He started that, you know, way back then. He started with the Stones. He's Jimmy Page lived down the block from him. They all knew each other.
I mean, looking at this list, Zeppelin, the Stones, the Beatles for the Get Back Sessions, mm-hmm. The Who, Bob Dylan, Linda Ronstadt, the band, Clapton, the Clash, Ryan Adams, yeah. Steve Miller. I mean, Small Faces. I'm just seeing the other ones. Blue Oyster Cult.
Told you.
Midnight Oil. Fuck yeah.
There you
go. How do whiskey wine a doodle? Fucking love that song, dude. The Belly, Joe Satriani. I mean, the list is yeah. incredible.
And you know who he told me he always wanted to work with?
Who?
Springsteen.
Really?
Yeah,
but John had the lock on that shit, didn't he? Landau?
I guess he did.
Did Landau produce? I think Landau produced.
I think Born to Run, but and I don't know.
I think he did. I think he did The Rising.
He did do The Rising? All the way up to that?
I wish we had Adam here. This is the one thing about that sucks about doing this live, mm-hmm. which is so much better, but Adam, I need the dude here going looking up. Adam, I miss you. If you're out there, you fucker.
How could you leave us?
He's in
San
Francisco.
What's funny?
I'll
tell you a quick story where you looked this up about Springsteen.
Yeah.
So I'm talking to Van Zandt, right? And he left the E Street Band. They didn't throw him out. He left.
Really?
Yeah, he left during the River Tour. He left. And I said, I didn't know where you were. I said, because I used to go, you know, I saw the River Tour. And I remember screaming, Bruce, Bruce, Bruce. But for like 2 hours after that, I'm like, hey, Bruce, I got to go to work.
You don't like a 4-hour concert?
Let's pick this up, man. I got traffic getting out of Jersey. Play Rosalita and let me get that. Clarence, blow the horn.
Yeah, you know? yeah.
And I made Van Zandt laugh, which made me happy. But then I went back and I saw the Born in the USA tour and he wasn't on it. And I was like, what the fuck? Nils Lofgren is bouncing on a trampoline. What are we doing here? And he wasn't there, but he's back in the band now.
He should be. I mean, the E Street Band needs to fucking be together. Mm-hmm. All right, so I was wrong.
Go ahead.
It was Brendan O'Brien.
Right.
Who's produced, I know he did, the Chili Peppers, he did the Black Crowes, Stone mm-hmm. Temple Pilots, I'm pretty sure, yeah, Rage Against the Machine, yeah, he's, and Springsteen, and mm-hmm. AC/DC. So this record, well, first, because I have so many questions to ask, I guess I just ask, like, what are your thoughts on this record? Before we start breaking down any tracks, like, what do you, because look, I could sit here
overall?
And say, overall, I mean, like,
it was important to me as a kid, looking back to it, it's three great singles, The Core, which I think is a malign, which should get more credit, the song The Core should get more credit, mm-hmm. and the other ones are close. This is what kind of asshole I am.
Would you bring notes?
No, I brought the songs and how I would fix them for my taste.
Oh, God bless your soul.
Yeah. So, yeah, J.J. Cale, the cover. I like the way the album starts. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into the tracks. But
no, we can do it.
Overall, looking back at it, it was important to me at the time. Now that I'm looking back, I can see the holes in it.
Well, what did you think when you first heard Slow Hand back in the 70s?
I couldn't articulate the fact that I can now, where I said, that's a great song, that's a great song.
Yeah.
I'm skipping that song.
Skipping
that one.
Yes.
That one doesn't speak to me. That one doesn't go anywhere.
Did at the time, though, those speak to you, though?
No. Or at the time, I just skipped them.
Yeah.
I just skipped them and went to the ones I wanted and didn't give any regard to. It's not like it was a whole album I could put on. There was a few out, like The Who, I could put on, you know, front to back.
Front to back.
And they were finished. You know, you had to get up and change the record. And you wanted to feel satisfied at the end. And that's one of my quibbles with the way they set this up. It ends with the Don Williams song. And I know why, because he was in this cowboy phase and they did it in
Oklahoma. Peaches and Diesel?
No.
Old Frisco?
No, Side End. We're All the...
We're talking about Side One?
Side One.
We're All the Way.
We're All the Way, yeah. It's Don Williams. So... I listened to it. First of all, it's not that much different from the original, so why are you doing it? And Don Williams' voice is more present in his original, and Eric is back. You got to remember, it's like, I love his throaty delivery. Wasn't a choice. He was loaded.
Yeah.
He didn't go, I think I'll do it like this. He goes, this is the only way I can do it because I'm shit-faced.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's... I mean, I'm really trying to figure out why this record is on the 500 greatest
albums. I'll tell you why. It's the hits. First of all, it starts out like it just grabs you. Cocaine starts. It's like you've entered the concert that's already on.
Okay.
You're in it. Like, holy shit, there's something going on.
Yeah.
And it's a great song. J.J. Cale song. It's a great fucking song. Then they hit you with the next great song, Wonderful Tonight. I have thoughts on it, but let's just go with the
sure,
the
sure. Yeah, of course.
Right? Then... Lay Down Sally. There's the three big hits right off the bat. Holy shit. So now you get one for free. Next time you see her, which he wrote. Here's my problem with that. If you've heard the song, it's, it wants to be a story song and it doesn't have an end. Because if you heard Next Time You See Her, it's Clapton talking to the guy that's now dating his ex. He's like, next time you see her, tell your lover and I'm going to beat the shit out of
him. Yeah, it says next time you see him, Eric will kill him. Yeah.
And it escalates. And he does it very softly. And it escalates to next time you see her, you know, tell her I love her and I'm going to kill you. And then it goes into the solo.
Yeah, right. What's funny. I thought about next time you see her. I was like, this sounds like the melody that could be used for like a Jimmy Dean breakfast sauces commercial.
Yeah.
It's very just.
But yeah. There's a thread in it at the end.
Yeah. I mean, there's a story. I didn't. You know what's funny is I didn't catch that story until I saw what Adam wrote.
Yeah.
I just, man.
Well, here's the thing with the story is it doesn't end. He next time I see you, I'm going to kill you. Then it goes into the solo. So now the solo is musically supposed to pick up the sentiment of what he's saying, and there's no like dirt on the guitar. There's no. I want the solo to be a little threatening or menacing because that's what. And then I want a resolution after the solo. He just repeats, "I'll kill you," and that's the end of the song. Give me something.
Yeah.
Like next time you see me, like it was just a joke, Your Honor. You know something.
I was just playing around.
Yeah, just something.
that was a tease.
Yeah. So it took me half the way there, and it didn't finish. And yeah, I don't think you're gonna end a side one
with World. Here's
what I would do. I would end the side one with Lay Down Sally, only because the song doesn't stop. It just trails off and fades out. So it makes you feel like there's more to come, and then you turn the record over.
Dude, I think. And I listened to this maybe six times yesterday, mm-hmm. and then another three or four before over the weeks prior.
Right.
I think by putting those first three songs up top, you ruin the rest of the record.
Yeah. Like you texted me last night. Yeah, it's top heavy.
It is beyond top heavy.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, you could cut this. This album could be five songs. In my opinion,
could have been an EP.
What a miracle of an EP that would have been mm-hmm. to release those three and then throw in maybe, I don't know. Like I like the core, but it's still there's just dude, Peaches and Diesel. Just like why is that on the record?
I agree with you. The only reason I can see because if you listen to it, there's a slight reiteration of Wonderful Tonight. The lead, the way he bends, and the notes. You can hear a little bit of the connective tissue in there. And that's the only thing, like, if you want to make this thing like a symphonic piece, because there's a reiteration at the end. But other than that, I agree with you. I don't know why it's in there.
I was just like, man, the only thing, like, because we weren't even, like, number one hits. Not all of them. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, like, all right, so let's talk about some of the tracks that we brought up so far.
Okay.
We brought up the three ones that I really want to talk about mm-hmm. are Cocaine. And if you've never heard it, listeners out there, it is not pro-coke. This is supposed to be anti-coke.
Well, it was when he sang it. Now it's anti-coke when he sings it because he says dirty coke.
Yeah. He changed. It's going to stop anybody.
No.
You know.
But he's doing what he needs to do for him.
If I was still doing coke and I went to see Clapton mm-hmm. and he plays this song, I am 100%, you know, going to pull out my little bag, do a bump and be like, cocaine!
Yeah.
That's fucking spreading. He wrote this for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for everybody that doesn't know, The lyrics are about drug addiction, something Clapton knew very well. As he explained in his autobiography, he had kicked a serious heroin habit by filling his body with cocaine and alcohol. His attitude at the time was that he could manage his addiction and quit at any time. He just didn't want to. That's why he could sing so objectively about a drug that was consuming him. When he finally did get off drugs, he had to learn how to make music while sober, which is a big transition because everything sounded very rough to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you already mentioned the dirty cocaine line. A lot of fans really took it the way that I would have taken this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound anti-cocaine. It's not enough like, yeah. You gonna suck a dick for a gram of coke. Cocaine, gang, gang, gang.
You got a pretty mouth. You're gonna sell everything in your house.
Cocaine. You stole your bubby's jewelry and you're pawning it. Cocaine. So a couple of little weird facts. The cocaine was censored and removed from the Argentinian edition of the album in late 77.
That's good, yeah. Now South America's got a problem with it.
Yeah, what are you doing, Argentina? Come on, man. The ban was lifted in 84. Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
This is one of Clapton's most famous songs, but the studio version was never released as a single. It peaked at number 30 in the U.S., number 3 in Canada, mm-hmm. and number 1 in Middle Earth, New Zealand.
Okay.
Great way to open the record.
I agree. It's already going. You're on a train.
The way it starts, the solos, the chorus, like this is an iconic Eric Clapton song. I think when you put out the top, would you say this is in his top 10?
It's a song that I want to hear when I go see him. Yeah. I want to hear this. I want to hear Crossroads. I want to hear Strange Brew. I want to hear Tears in Heaven. I want to hear Wonderful Tonight. I want to hear After Midnight. Yeah, I want to hear all this stuff.
What about, I can change the world.
If he plays it last, I'll get out to beat the traffic.
I'm going to be your third name. What's he close? Have you seen him live?
I have not. I met him.
Come on, dude.
Okay, right, okay. Let me rephrase. I met him. I ran into him at the Beverly Center. He asked me for directions. I'm not making it up. I'm in the Beverly Center. Somebody taps me up. He goes, excuse me, mate. Do you know where the Warner Brothers store is? And I stopped.
No,
and I went,
fucking way, dude.
This is what I said. Hey, you him? And he laughed, and I pointed. I couldn't speak. I pointed. He walked away. He goes, thanks, mate. As he's walking away, I said, thanks for Layla. And he just kept walking. That was it.
Oh, God. That's so amazing.
We got the same doctor, though. We got the same for my knee. Yeah,
really?
His picture's hanging up in the doctor.
What's wrong with his?
Well, I didn't see the chart, Josh. I just saw the picture.
I would have thought it would be like a wrist or an elbow. Mm. He's not moving around that much.
He broke his toe after Ocean Boulevard came out, right? He's got a shitload of money from I Shot the Sheriff. Stigwood, and the tax rate in the UK was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So Stigwood,
I think it still is, right?
I don't know. I don't have the money to know it's going to affect me. But he said, go live in the Bahamas for a month because you're going to get killed with taxes.
Yeah.
So they rent a mansion. They're shit-faced. Him and Patty Boyd are shit-faced. They're having a playful fight, is the way he said it in the book. She locks herself in the bathroom. He tries to kick the door down, breaks his toe.
Nice.
Yeah. He's in a Jamaican hospital wrapping up his toe.
Oh, I bet he is. He's got a horrible temper, I bet.
When he was drinking, yeah.
I'm going to jump to this right now because I just feel like this is a perfect time to bring this up. So I take Patreon questions as well.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure. I feel like
Chicago's. Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Al McLeod. I hope I said that right. M-C-C-L-E-O-D. Does the fact that Eric Clapton, who, and we might talk about if this is the right phrasing or not, is a flat out terrible person,
right,
affect the enjoyment of his music for you and your guest?
Well, it's the question of, first of all, thanks.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Al, for the question. Thank you for being a Patreon supporter.
Thank you so much, buddy.
Al, check out the Adam Ferrara podcast.
Check it out. Fucking subscribe to that Patreon.
Yes, I got to get one of those too. So it's the question of separating the artist from the art. Can you do that? And it's a question you have to, I mean, it's like a Woody Allen movie. Jim Norton has one of the best jokes about this topic.
It?
Norton's, it just kills me. He goes, suppose, and I'm butchering it, so Jim, I apologize. Suppose you heard Alexander Graham Bell was a pedophile. Right?
You're not going to use electricity?
You're
telephone?
You're
going
to stop picking up the phone?
Yeah, that was Edison. Yeah, Graham Bell was a telephone. Yeah. I'm an idiot. I don't know history.
That's all right.
I butchered the butcher.
That's all right. I butchered the joke. But that's the thing. Can you separate the artist from the art? You know?
I mean, look, we need the telephone.
We need the telephone.
Do we need the song Layla?
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you what. I'll give you Peaches and Diesel.
I'll give you two Peaches.
I'll give you two Peaches and Diesel. I'll give you Mean Old Frisco.
And I'll throw in the song with Babyface.
Yeah, we're all the way in. I'll give you that. And I'll give you the Backless album that followed this album. I'll give you that too.
What are the bad things that we've learned about Eric Clapton over the years? Do you know?
I don't know. I just know from his autobiography. He self admits his wrongdoing. There's a great story. I'll tell you a story.
Yo, please.
He's in the Bahamas, right? He's flying to Tulsa to do this to play this gig. Shit faced on the plane. The pilot called ahead, going, "There's some English guy. You guys got to come take him away." Right?
Yeah.
I'm Eric Clapton. Get in the car. So they're booking him. He goes, "Are you Eric Patrick Clapton? You don't have the right to use my middle name. How dare you?" He goes, "Get in there." He goes, "I'm Eric Clapton." "No, you're not. Get me a guitar and I'll prove it."
No fucking way.
They brought him a guitar. He's playing the guitar. They dropped the charges. They're taking pictures with him. They let him go.
Oh, my God. But this is, he wrote this, right?
He wrote the autobiography.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Like, Eric.
According to the book. Yeah.
Got to embellish.
But the
a little
shit
bit.
He admits to doing is, you know, I think it's, look, I'm not a friend of Bill's when it comes to recovery. I know who he is. We love a lot of the same people.
Sure.
But I know there's a step, and for any people that are in the program, I apologize because of my ignorance. I think step five is where you got to make amends to people and shit.
Yeah.
So
four is where you dig in and you find it, and five is when you apologize.
This book was, you could see how much of this book was that for him.
Well, what about now with like the anti-vaccination stuff, and it feels like he's, which, look, the right or wrong,
he had neuropathy though. I think he had neuropathy before he got the injection. He had a nervous some kind of condition. Look, I got both vaccines. I wear a mask. Josh, I have a pre-existing condition. I'm a pussy. I'm a pussy with questionable health care.
Yeah.
So I'm wearing a condom right now, Myers. I don't know where the fuck you've been. So it goes back to, can you separate the artist from the art? I think that's what it is.
And he didn't do anything as bad as like what Michael Jackson's being accused of or R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he's known as being a dick.
Okay.
He's known as being like, but I mean, when, dude.
Axl Rose is woman cuddling? You're still going to listen to Welcome to the Jungle, right?
Yeah, but man, he hasn't done anything bad enough for me to turn anything off. Mm-hmm. It was just, he was a dick.
Okay,
that's
the point.
He's a diva dick.
Can you separate the artist from the art, and what is your line in the sand?
I don't think what Clapton has done to me at all, I was just kind of more playing devil's advocate, is bad enough for me to stop listening to his music. Mm-hmm. But the night is still young. You know, and this is where he could start turning. He's getting older. Mm. And, you know, as you get older, you're not going to change your ways. So whatever you were like, you know, when you were 30, you're going to be even worse by the time you're 80.
I push back on that for this. If you're not actively engaged in life, I think, and I'm going to butcher this quote. I think it was Muhammad Ali, or I heard it attributed to Muhammad Ali. If you see the world at 40, same way you did at 20. You've wasted 20 fucking years.
Yeah. No, completely.
So
completely. But once you get past, let's say, 30, I shouldn't have said. Mm-hmm. Once you get past, I'd say about 40. Because mm-hmm. 40, a lot of your, like, you're just streamlined. It's like what you know is what you know. And if you didn't learn it before that, it's going to be rare that you learn it mm-hmm. after. And it's only going to get exacerbated the older you get. So if you're a crotchety kind of 40-year-old, you know, a million, multi-millionaire that people call you God. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, he pushed back on a lot of that. Clapton is God. First of all, and the picture is great because there's a dog pissing on it.
Yeah, I love
picture,
that.
Which I love.
I love that.
And he pushed back on a lot of it. That's, I think that was a lot of why, well, he was this virtuoso. He was this virtuoso. And when he was talking to Steve Winwood, when he was forming Traffic.
Big fear, higher love. Big.
Okay, go ahead. He was talking to Steve Winwood. He was forming Traffic and Eric was forming Cream. Winwood's philosophy was unskilled labor. Like, he just put his friends together to start jamming and make the music around that.
Yeah.
And Clapton was in a trio because he saw Buddy Guy at the Marquee Club in a trio. And he, Ginger Baker, talked to him and said he wants to start a band. And Clapton said he wanted a trio because he saw Buddy Guy. And he said, I want Jack Bruce. And Ginger Baker went, fuck, because they were together on the jazz circuit. And they were like banging heads all the time. Like, but that's the only way Eric would do it. But what he realized in the trio was like, oh, fuck, I got to start making, I got to fill this space, you know, because it's only three instruments. That's why The Who was so great, because of Entwistle. Entwistle was playing, and Townsend said, like a Bach organ. It was filling, the Sonics were filling in. He had all these effects on the bass.
Yeah.
He was playing lead bass. Basically, Townsend's a good rhythm player because he had to keep the fucking song together. Because Keith is soloing all over the drums. Yeah. Entwistle's soloing. Roger's singing. He's like, well, someone's got to hold this shit down.
Yeah.
So when Clapton was, he was pushing back on the Clapton is God stuff. And that's why his solo stuff, he went backwards. Because he was hiding a little bit. He was really drunk, but he was hiding a little bit. I think it was Marcy Levy was the female voice on Slowhand. And they were all...
you check.
Yeah, they were all musicians from Oklahoma because he was in that his cowboy phase. And he would step back because he was never really sure of his voice and it was all blown out.
Mm-hmm.
So he would step back and let other people sing. And he said in his book, the alcohol was having him neglecting his duties as a band leader. And he wanted to push back on the virtuoso Clapton is God thing that was forming.
So, all right. So this is a good time to ask this question because mm-hmm. we're talking about this guy. I mean, if you think about it, has had, you know, an incredible career. Everybody he's played with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Yardbirds, Cream, Derek and the Dominoes, and then you have the solo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What is, where do you, how do you rank these phases of Eric Clapton?
The Yardbirds was, I first came of him, aware of him because of the White Album. So I'm going to go, Cream was my favorite, although some of the stuff is overproduced. Outside Woman Blues, the Joe Reynolds song.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the effect on the guitar.
But, okay.
Whoever
did that, you fucked up.
It was Felix Papalotti and Tom Dowden. Who the fuck am
dude,
I to say
anything?
You
know so many names, dude. Yeah. You know names.
I know.
You are fucking a Wikipedia page
I
that's come
problems.
To life.
I have a lot of problems, Josh. So that phase was good for me. Blind Faith, it's got one good song and a creepy cover.
Yeah.
It's just that album. Just, but the idea on paper was great.
Yeah.
You know? And then the solo stuff, it's hit or miss. I like songs. I don't like whole albums. Like, After Midnight, I like, was a J.J. Cale song. Crossroads from Cream, that live Crossroads was just, blew my fucking head off. Just yeah. blew my head off hearing what he could do. And then his later stuff, Phil Collins actually produced Behind the Sun. So he got more poppy. Or he got more structured, is a better word than poppy, in his approach to music making. You know, there was what was the song he did for The Color of Money?
It's in the way you use it.
I can just see fucking Tom Cruise.
It's in the way that you use it. I think he also did the solo in, I might be fucking wrong, but you know he did the score for Lethal Weapon.
He did.
Let me double check.
This here. I don't know.
Dude, you don't know this?
No, this I don't know.
Hold on. All right.
I know Jimmy Page did it for Death Wish 2.
Lethal, I'm going to spell it all wrong.
After,
keep going, yeah.
He did it for Death Wish 2, and Jimmy Page was supposed to do, Kenneth Anger was this occultist filmmaker, and he was supposed to do the soundtrack for Lucifer Rising, some kind of wacky.
So the soundtrack for Lethal Weapon, and you can hear it because it's just like, it's just, it's David Sanborn. Mm-hmm. I think does he play sax?
Yeah, he's a horn player.
He's the horn player. Eric Clapton on guitar, and then I guess Michael Kamen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, dude, you could, dude, it's all songs performed by and composed by Michael, Eric, and David.
Mm.
You're going to hear it. It's like, I'm too old for this shit. And I'm pretty sure...
Diplomatic immunity.
I'm pretty sure he did the solo in the George Harrison song, Cheer Down.
Right.
Do you know the song Cheer Down?
I do not.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Let me just double check.
Well, you know what happened when he brought him... While you looked that up?
Yeah, go ahead.
So in the book, Harrison brings him to the recording studio for the Guitar Gently Weeps session. By the way, one take.
Why My Guitar Gently Weeps?
That solo's one take on a borrowed guitar. He borrowed George's guitar and did it on one take. And he said in the book, he goes, I felt George, and this is terrible actually, I felt George was bringing me to the session to restore his credibility with John and Paul because they weren't happy with the songs he was contributing. And if you realize, with the Beatles, after Brian Epstein died, you know, Paul was like, we should do the Magical Mystery Tour. And George was like, we should go with the Maharishi. And John was like, who's the Japanese girl? You know, so they were all trying to figure out what to do.
And Ringo was like, glug, 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 glug. Drinky, drinky, drinky. Yeah. Makes me feel fun.
So they followed George to India. They followed him for the meditation thing. And when that didn't work out, I just pictured him in the studio going, well, that didn't work. So he brought Clapton.
What do we do with all these shrouds now? I don't know. We've got so many. How many more flowers? Reeves, do I have to work? We'll take this off now.
Stop the humming and play the bass.
Put down the sitar. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Me and Patty got to. I feel like there's a wedge between me and Patty. Something. Clapton, why do you keep wanting to go to an ice cream social with Patty?
Eric's here again.
Again. All right, here. Let's wait. Do you have more to talk about?
No.
With
so
that?
So he brought him in. It was one take.
Yeah.
And he felt like. Clapton said he felt like George brought him in to say, okay, look what I can do. I can get this guy to play.
Cheer Down. It's one of my favorite George Harrison songs. It's written in the mid or early 90s, I guess. But that's the time that Lethal Weapon 2 came out. It is Clapton on guitar. If you haven't listened to it. All right, we mentioned her. We've joked around about her. We must talk about
Patty Boyd.
Patty Boyd, Wonderful Tonight. So I'll give you the little scoop on this, Fleece Army. Clapton wrote Wonderful Tonight in 76 while waiting for his girlfriend and future wife, Patty Boyd, to get ready for a night out. They were going to a Buddy Holly tribute that Paul McCartney was putting together. Patty retold the story in 2008 that Clapton was sitting round playing his guitar while I was trying on dresses upstairs. I was taking so long and I was panicking about my hair, my clothes, and everything, and I came downstairs expecting him to be really upset to me, but instead he goes, listen to this. And on March 28th, 1979, the day after they were married, Clapton brought Patty on stage and sang this to her at his show in Tucson, Arizona. So
I got a different version.
Hit me.
From the book.
No, yeah, please.
From his book, the house was called Hurtwood. He bought this house called Hurtwood.
Yeah, when you were that rich, your house has a name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah.
My house has a mortgage. There's no name, just a fucking mortgage. So the house is called Hurtwood. She's upstairs. He's downstairs playing.
Yeah.
And he goes, in the book, I've had enough. I went upstairs. I go, look, you look wonderful. Please don't change again. We have to go because we're going to be late. And went back down, picked up the guitar. He goes, and I wrote it in 10 minutes. And I wrote it out of anger and frustration. And he didn't think he had anything. Okay. So then he's traveling with Ronnie Wood. And they're doing a lot of... Ronnie Wood had this idea to do Ronnie Wood's passing show, which was like a train in a circus. You just go to a town, you set up, and hopefully you make enough money to break even.
Yeah.
Never fucking worked. So they're hanging around, and he starts playing this song, and Ronnie likes it, and he's like, oh, I guess I got something here. And that's, you know, he did the song, and he did play it for Patty. He used to bring her on stage during that leg of the tour, Texas, San Antonio, and stuff. And then when he sent her back to the UK. He goes, you have to go home. There's no women on tour. And he just went out drinking and
really
drinking and getting girls again.
So So if you do you know the full story of basically of
I know a story.
What? Tell me the story, dude. By the way, you're killing this. You are killing this.
Thank
like,
you.
Like, I don't know.
I played the guitar this week.
I mean, come on, dude. Yeah. Come on, you know. Let me grab the guitar. Let's jam. Let's jam for the next
beginning
hour.
Of every good bar. I'm a bar band guitarist. I'm saying okay. That's I know this bar.
Do you play? Do you play out and stuff?
No,
like on stage?
I haven't played in years.
Would you?
I played in college. We were in a bar band.
I'll book you on the goddamn comedy jam, the music comedy where you have to sing and play.
I have a strat. I have a Clapton strat in my.
So what we'll do is what we could do is we could pick a song where if you don't want to sing it, I'll sing it and you just shred on guitar.
Okay.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'll do it.
But yeah, we're wasting an opportunity if we don't do it.
Excellent.
All right. So tell me your story about how George lost
Harrison,
Patty.
George Harrison meets Patty Boyd during the set of Hard Day's Night. She's in the background. You could see it. She's in the train scene.
Yeah.
Right. They get married. Clapton is George's
best friend. Right.
Yeah. Well, they became friends. They became friends, and Clapton actually pissed George off. Because he gave him an acetate of the White Album before it was released. And Clapton was touring the States and was playing it for people. And he thought he was helping, you know, playing it for the music people. And George called him up and goes, "You fucking idiot." I'm paraphrasing. Clapton always felt guarded around him after that because he didn't know any better.
Yeah.
But then they became friends after that. So they're hanging around. And he's a Beatle. You know, so he's losing interest in the wife. Yeah, I think he kind of knew that.
So he was losing interest.
They were.
Or is it because this is Clapton saying that? Don't forget.
This is according to the book and what I know.
Yeah.
So they become friend. He's hanging around, and I think he actually said something to Patty that he had feelings for, and I think she said, "Well, that's nice." Oh, he was doing heroin at the time. He said, "If you don't leave George and come with me, I'm going to become a heroin addict," which he already was.
Yeah.
And
she's like, "All right, dude,
I gotta go, pal." So they don't see each other for a while. And if you think about Patty Boyd, George wrote something about her,
dude. I pulled up the songs.
Mm-hmm.
This is how many songs that have been written about Patty Boyd, and how many of these are incredible. So you got mm-hmm. "Wonderful Tonight."
Mm-hmm.
"Why Does Love Got to Be So Sad" by Derek and the Dominoes.
Great song.
You have, I'm just doing all the Clapton ones. Mm-hmm. "She's Waiting."
Mm-hmm.
You have "Layla," mm-hmm. which was the first one that I think he wrote for.
Yep.
Then you have
"Bell Bottom Blues," I think is about her as well.
I don't have that one on here, but I've got "For You Blue."
Mm-hmm.
"I Need You," which is off of "Help." We just did that with Jim Jefferies.
Mm-hmm.
"It's All Too Much." That's another Beatles song. And then "Something." So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I've been told, I found the article, that there were 11 songs total, which, you know, for the most part, "Something," "Wonderful Tonight," and "Layla." No wonder she went with Eric. He was writing way better songs than George was.
So he plays the album.
Yeah.
He brings her over, right? They finished doing Derek and the Dominoes. And he brings her over to play the album, and that, I think that's when he said, "If you don't leave him, I'm going to become a full blown heroin." He goes, "Hey, thanks for the song. I gotta go."
She's like, "I'm getting out of here."
Yeah.
So then, how did they get together?
Eventually, they got together, and I got to remember. I don't remember the exact situation, but there was a point where they were dating. They didn't get married till 79.
Yeah.
There's in the book is a great scene. He's like. He's sitting with George. Eric and George are sitting at Hurtwood in the great room at Hurtwood. And George goes, "Well, I guess I better divorce her." And Eric says, "If you divorce her, I have to marry her." So, because they weren't divorced, they just left. You know, she just went over.
And what did George say?
Again, he's a Beatle. His world is different.
But don't you still, like, regardless of how famous you are, right. It's like ego, stuff like that. I mean, unless they were done.
Yeah, which I think they were. This is what happened once while they were still married. I'll give you an example. This when they were still married, George and Patty. In the book, he says, he goes to Eric. He goes, "Why don't you spend some time with Patty so I could spend some time with her sister?" So,
okay,
right, you know,
damn George, you player.
You know, if that was
To quote the great Jim Jefferies, Patty Boyd must have some good pussy. You know, to be able to have that many songs about...
It's probably got a tongue in it.
The guys, once they met her, once they had sex with her, they were gone. That's like, it. That was it.
She's all nine muses.
She's, and the thing is, she's, I'm not trying to be like a dip here, but she's not like the most gorgeous woman in the world.
Yeah, but this essence, there's like, it's like, it's, there's a thing. It's like what my guitar teacher said. How do I get that sound? That's not that sound. It's not an amp. That's his soul. You know, there's just a being.
Lekka, what are you doing? Chill the fuck out.
What? I've stopped showing the dog affection. Now she's growling.
She's like, no, dude. She was like, yeah. She heard you dissing Patty.
Is that it?
Yeah. She's team George. Mm-hmm. She's not team Clapton.
So, yeah, I mean, there's the essence. Like, people just have an essence.
Yeah, sure. You know? I get it. No, I get it. But I mean,
plus, it's the 60s. So everyone's high as a fucking Georgia pine.
They're high. They're fucking, you know. But, I mean, look. I'm so glad she exists just for fucking something.
My buddy named his daughter Layla after
Did he
that
really?
Song. Yeah.
Which version of Layla do you like better? Do you like the unplugged,
the original?
The
screaming one.
Yeah, also probably.
Oh, but I do like the slower one of
the unplugged?
After Midnight. After Midnight, the slow version of After Midnight.
I don't know that one.
Midnight, then it was co-opted by Bud Light. It was used in a commercial and it ruined it for me. But it's I like that version better. There's a great version of Crossroads on the 25th anniversary album that he did with Mark Knopfler, Elton John, Bernie Taupin were in the band.
I think we have that somewhere in these notes. I heard about that.
It's a great version.
So Wonderful Tonight, this peaked at number 16 in the U.S. And in Canada. It reached as high as number one in Japan and number two in the Netherlands and number three in France. And in 88, Clapton appeared at the Nelson Mandela. Was this what you were talking about? No, so in 88, Clapton appeared in the Nelson Mandela 75th birthday tribute concert as guest guitarist for Dire Straits. The group became his backing musicians for a surprise performance of Wonderful Tonight during their set. Is Wonderful Tonight one of the greatest love songs ever written?
It's one of the most enduring songs in my life because it blossomed as I got older. You know, like I heard it when I was a kid, but now it has meaning because I'm sitting in that fucking chair.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for my wife. I'm having that. And then she comes down and she's stunning. Josh, you're going to Google my wife. She's stunning. I'm batting over my head.
Yeah.
My wife is, Jesus, she's
big. You got a pretty good IMDb page, bro.
Yeah, no. Here's how I know she loves me, Josh. There's no money.
I know.
I mean,
but you're
there's no money.
But also, to go with the Patty thing and the guitar, your tone is fucking phenomenal, bro.
Thank you.
You have a phenomenal tone.
Oh, thank you.
And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I was just in Aspen and fucking there's the most gorgeous women you've ever seen with these stubby Jews. And you're like, how the fuck? Oh, because he's a billionaire.
Money. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, us guys that are like, you know, 5'9", whatever, and we're working with what we got and our sense of humor is like our vibes is what is attractive to some of these other chicks.
But that song, as I've grown to appreciate that song, it makes me, I've been in that moment where she's driving me fucking crazy, but look at her. You know, I'm lucky to have her. You know what? I got gray hair on this side. You know why? This is the side she sleeps on. She's killing me. She's fucking killing me.
You're good.
Yeah, but I've been waiting. But
you look wonderful tonight.
Thank you.
You do look wonderful tonight.
I handed her car keys because I have an aching head. No, you're drunk. Stop it. You're drunk.
Again.
Yeah, there's a picture in the, did you see the smashed Ferrari in the album? In the album, there's a picture of him kissing Patty, and there's a picture of a wrecked Ferrari. It's a 365 GTC. I think it was a 74. I'm not sure of the year.
Okay.
But it's a 365 GTC Ferrari that George had. He drove up to see him at Hurtwood in that car, and he bought the car. I'm like, how much do you fucking need from this guy?
Yeah.
But he did. He bought the Ferrari, and it's a stick, and he can't drive his stick.
Do you have any old clothes I could wear? Do you have anything you're going to give away to Goodwill?
Yeah, sure, Eric, take them. Why are you so fascinated with me?
Yeah. But he wrecked that car.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
There was a bar at the end of Ed's house. In the book, he said it's 300 yards away. I would go down and get drunk and wreck the Ferrari every time I came home. He'd hit the fucking fence.
That's so stupid.
He bought a 39 Caddy. He didn't know how to drive. He bought a 30. I never see a 39 Caddy. It's a strip mall on wheels. You can't drive that far. He parked it outside when he was living. After he left John Mayall. He was living in some with a bunch of girls.
Yeah.
He just parked. He couldn't drive it. He just parked it outside.
I mean, when you have that kind of money, man, you know, you find somebody to drive it. All right. Let's move on to Lay Down Sally. Mm-hmm. Listen, and if anybody wants to get mad at me, I don't feel like we need to talk about the other songs on the record. These are the three. This is the reason why it's on the 500 Greatest Albums.
I will say this, if we're going to, because I agree with you. I don't
know. If you have stuff to add, please add. Before we, I mean, do you want to do Lay Down Sally and you want to add the other shit?
Mino Frisco's a good slide experiment. I like to hear him. He plays slide on it, but it doesn't go anywhere for me. May You Never. It's a cover of a John Martin song. Here's my quibble with May You Never. John Martin did it. It's just him and an acoustic guitar, and it's a better song. And he's doing interesting stuff on the guitar because it's just him. So he's doing, there's a slight, you could hear Larry Graham, you know, the bass player from Sly and stuff.
Yeah.
He's the one that invented slap bass.
Oh, cool.
Because he was in a band with his mother, and they didn't want to pay the drummer. So the mother paid to play the piano. He played the bass, and he had to fill in the backbeat. So that's how he came up with it.
Oh, that's funny, dude.
So he's doing a little bit of that. He's filling it out. My quibble with it was he was on the way to taking me to a place because he had the organ in it, and it was the arrangement he put in it. And I'm a sucker for a church organ, a Harmon B3. But it didn't go anywhere. I mean, it didn't escalate. If you're going to go there, you're going to put that organ in, give me a chorus, give me gospel, give me a choir, go somewhere.
But that's, dude, I'm telling you, man, and I feel like such a dick having to say all this, but dude, that is the reason why this record is just boring after track three. I mean, I'm not saying the other ones aren't good and I could find something to enjoy out of it. I just was
as an album, I went, you gave me, you got everything. My attention, and then you got my attention, and now it's just atmosphere.
Yeah, dude, you got me. I mean, in the sex thing, it's like I am like about to pop after the third song, and then it is just, you know, I'm thinking of like my fucking Miss Schmetz, my algebra teacher, like just like it's gone. My erection is gone.
Yeah.
It kind of bums me out because I really was, after those first three, I was like, man,
where's it going?
This is about to be the greatest record. Oh, no, it's not.
I'm going to defend the core. Let's go back to Lay Down Sally.
So, defend the core real quick.
I'll defend the core because I think it's a great song. My only quibble with the core is the effect on the keyboard is a little Edgar Winterish for me. It's like, if you need a little funk in there, which I think they were going for funk.
Yeah.
Then maybe a clavicle, you know, maybe something like.
Supposedly this is
a clavicle.
Tibula.
We need a bone in there.
This is a rare tibula song that Clapton performs with horns. Mel Collins, who also recorded with King Crimson and the Rolling Stones, played sax.
He was on Some Girls, I think, and he played with Bad Company.
And it's the first time Clapton's used horns since his first solo record.
Mm-hmm.
The core. But
it's got a jazzy feel to it. And that keyboard player, I think they were going for a funk element, but it missed for me. It dates the song. How's that? It dates.
After those first three, it's straight 79, 78, whenever this came out. No, but it's like, dude, like Cocaine, boom, Wonderful Tonight, arguably one of the most romantic love songs ever written. Mm-hmm. You can play it at weddings.
Every slow dance.
And Lay Down Sally, mm-hmm. which we're going to dive into real quick, Brown Sugar or Honky Tonk Woman. Mm-hmm. This is like a song that transcends everything on the record. It sounds country. It could be rock. It's rockabilly. The guitar tone sounds incredible. The chorus mm-hmm. is great. The lyrics are fun. It's Clapton trying to convince a girl to hang out with him in bed instead of leaving. The song is not typical of Clapton's work, which is often based on the blues. Reading that makes me love this song even more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a fucking stupid face. I didn't even realize that was about. I just thought it was like some country saying, like, Lay Down Sally, like that. Oh my God, how many times have we all been there? It's like, nah, come on, like that's... Come on, I'm going to do next time I'm with a girl and she's getting ready. Like, come on. Lay down, Jessica, come on. Come back to bed. Don't want to take the train to the financial district.
It's late and I don't have cab money.
The Ubers are running slow.
Guy's got a hammer in the subway.
Yeah, dude. There's a crazy person out on the street, but yo, if you want to, that's on you.
The only thing is, the great rhythm guitar, Clapton ain't playing. George Terry's playing it.
Yes. I have Marcy Levy, who we've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Let me see if there's anything else. I wanted to write the song called. So here, this is what I got. Marcy Levy, one of Clapton's backup singers, told Q Magazine how this song came together. We were in the studio one day and Clapton said, I want to write this song called Lay Down Sally. So I went into the corner and came up with the melody. First, it had a little more of a Little Feet groove, but we worked it all day and eventually Eric hit on the rhythm and I played keyboards and we recorded the track. Then Eric said, can you write some lyrics at home tonight? So I did and we recorded the vocals the next day. This is a B-side to Cocaine. Peaked at number 3. That's crazy. It's a B-side. Peaked at number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 and Canadian singles charts. This is a crossover country music. That's what I'm saying. It's like this is played on the, you know, fucking both. This is played everything. Reaching number 26 in the charts in 78. Clapton's best showing on the Hot Country Songs chart. Clapton attributed other members of his band as having a big influence on the track and explained, it's as close as I can get being English, but the band being a Tulsa band, they play like that naturally. They couldn't get them to do an English rock sound. No way. Their idea of a driving beat isn't being loud or anything. It's subtle. And the song is grammatically incorrect, as it would mean taking Sally and actually placing her horizontally. When asking Sally to join him in bed, Clapton's correct grammar would have been lie down, Sally. She's in good company. Why did you put this in here? It's fucking English
well,
class.
The beat is Carl Radle was the bass player on this. Carl Radle was fucking great. He was in Derek and the Dominoes. Mm-hmm. He was in everything. I mean, he's just a great bass player. He has that slow dance kind of, and even in Wonderful Tonight, he's got that slow dance beat in there. He really, really great bass player. I put him there with Duck Dunn. You know,
I don't know Duck Dunn.
Donald Duck Dunn. He played with Clapton a lot too.
Okay.
You know, he was the bass player in the Blues Brothers band.
Oh, okay.
With the pipe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
Yeah.
These three songs fucking rule.
Yes. I'm putting the core in there. I'm going to defend the core.
Nah.
I'm defending the core.
All right. So here we go. Let's get some random facts about this record. This is the second and final time we're going to be talking about Clapton's solo catalog. We had Joe Satriani on at number. Oh, that's funny. We had Joe Satriani on for 411 for 461 Ocean Boulevard.
Did he like the album?
Oh, he loved it.
Yeah.
He loved it. And he was, you want to talk about like technical, talking about the tone and the this and the keys and that. He was like spot on. If you're like a guitar fan.
Yeah.
If you haven't heard that episode, go back and listen to it. But Clapton's going to make an appearance again with Cream and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. As for the 2020 re-rank, neither of Clapton's solo albums made it, but Cream's Disraeli Gears came in at 170. Yeah, I don't know.
Disraeli Gears?
No, I don't. I don't really know it that well. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, but that's, you know, I really haven't dug into Cream and Derek and the Dominoes.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Cream that I like. It's that they're muscular and funky, you know?
Yeah.
It's
like rock. No, it feels like...
No, but
it feels like
more jazzy. There's some stuff that goes a little too awry.
I mean, something like... I mean, that's like iconic, you know, the birth of... Like, there's no... Black Sabbath if that song doesn't come out. Am I wrong?
No, you're right there with the intention of the... I don't think it was written for that. Ozzy called it doom music. We'll write the doom music.
Yeah.
You know, that's love, what he called it.
Love the doom.
But yeah, that was a precursor to it. That was written with... Jack Bruce wrote that with Peter Brown as the sun was coming up and they were up all night doing coke. And he said, well, what about this? And Peter Brown's going, well, it's getting near dawn. Ties grows tired eyes. You know?
But everything else I've heard, you know, the Derek and the Dominoes is Layla. I know that for sure. And I know Cream just fucking, everything I heard by Cream, I think fucking rules. You know, this stuff is a little bit, it's not bad.
Well, you got to, also, it's where he was in his life.
Sure. No, I got to take that into account for sure.
And it was also after the 60s, the 70s was kind of the exhaust port. It was like, you know, you're in the motor, you know, the internal combustion, bang, the spark plug goes off, the cylinders go down, and then the exhaust comes out. Like, whew, I can't, Jesus, I got to lay down. Put on the carpenters.
All right. Speaking of which, you, because I know you worked on Top Gear. Mm-hmm. What is your go-to Eric Clapton song to listen to when you're driving?
I like the core.
Fuck you, dude. You're kidding me.
All right. And then if I.
The core's pretty good, dude.
I gotta say, it's not Cocaine. I'll tell you that. It's not. It's just not enough there for me.
Yeah.
But Crossroads, a live version of Crossroads of him screaming. One of the best driving songs is Deep Purple, Highway Star.
I was just about to ask you that. What's like your go to
Highway Star? You know, I also like Aerosmith's Sweet Emotion when I'm looking for a parking spot. You're in a mall looking for a parking spot,
and then hopefully you see the car, like the car has taillights come on. They start pulling out, and you're like, What is my favorite driving song? I'll tell you the truth, and this is not like a legend. Well, I think they're legendary for people my age. Mm-hmm. The Black Crowes.
Good.
The whole album, Southern Harmony Musical Companion.
Remedy. How great is Remedy?
Everything on that record. I had a gig in San Diego, and I didn't want to do it, and I was smoking a little bit of pot on the way down. And I just started listening to that record randomly. I was just saying, I listen to Black Crowes. And man, there were certain songs that I felt like my car was about to take off.
Yeah.
It was just
the weed.
It was the weed, but it was the music too.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, this is God's honest truth. I have 3 DUIs. That's why I don't drink anymore. Mm-hmm. Every DUI, I was listening to Metallica. Wow. Every DUI, I was fucking just. How can you not?
Yeah.
How can you not?
Yeah.
Go 80 miles an hour in a Honda Civic. You got to.
I had I had Steve Gorman, the drummer from the Black Crowes, on my show.
I got to listen to that.
His book is really
good. I got to read that. Everybody's telling me if you're a fan.
If you're a fan, listen to the book. He breaks down in Japan. He's crying.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's really a good book.
Great band. Really underrated.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I wanted to make this joke earlier. You were talking about all the people you've had on your podcast and gotten to meet. And it's like, and I was like, oh, man, like, well, I'm doing a show with Kid Rock in 3 weeks.
That's great.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited. In Nashville.
I had him on the show. He was on Top Gear with us.
Yeah.
He's from Michigan. He's a car dude.
Yeah. It's just like my guitarist was like, well, I guess, you know, I'm still excited, even though he's kind of like so right wing red. I go, but that's who he is. And that's who he's always been.
Man.
You know what I mean? So who gives a fuck?
It's I'm going to stop listening to Johnny Cash.
No, you got to, like, you know, dude, I met a girl when I was in Texas, you know, a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
She was hot and we started hanging out. And at the end of the night, I don't know how we started talking about politics, but she's like, yeah, I voted for Trump. And I was like, I could give a fuck. Like, what am I going to do? Go, ugh. Like, those people that are like, I would never. And I'm just like, all right, well.
I'm more like, I'm looking for, it's even like in my, we're talking, this is art, separating artists from the art. I make it a conscious effort. And it hasn't been that much of an effort because I've never been a social critic and I've never been a political dude or a satirist. I'm more of a student of the human condition. So, yeah, I'm contributing to harmony by trying to find out what brings people together rather than, okay,
tearing
look,
them apart.
I don't know enough about I'm not on the front line. I'm on the second line. Like after the war's over, whoever's, the question's going to be asked, all right, what's going to make it better?
You know? Yeah.
Because that's the difference between power and force. Force has to be acted upon. Power exists within you. So if you ask somebody a question, they got to go within them to find the answer. That's my secret evil plan.
Dude, you are a special, special person.
I mean that.
Adam.
I'll knock it off. Listen, you know who I had on my show that's really good?
Why?
With fun, if you get him, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
I told you I had Billy on too.
Yeah, he was great.
He's the best.
Isn't he great?
At the end of the podcast, I go, man, that was so great. And he goes, man, that was a gas.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. And I was like, oh, God.
Didn't he make you feel great?
He did.
He did. And I did my research and I said, listen, if I hear a shuffle in C, it's with a walking bass line, it's you guys. He goes, he was great.
Listen to his podcast. Adam, I'm not just saying that because he's my buddy, but it's like, dude, your energy is infectious. It all makes sense why you've had such a great career.
Oh, thank you, brother.
All right, let's get through a couple of this bullshit and then we'll get you out of here. here. Do we want to read our pal Robert Christow's review? Because he wasn't a good one. He wasn't very enthusiastic about the album, lamenting how much of the record's best guitar solos were played by George Terry and feeling Clapton had regressed as a singer, sounding like he's blown his voice. Doing what, I wonder?
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree, but yeah, I kind of agree.
I kind of agree about the voice, but I also know, and I only know from reading the book, is he was never... Armand Erdogan was the one that was pushing him to be a singer. John Mayall was the first one that made him sing. Made him sing. He didn't want to sing. And Armand Erdogan was the one that pushed him to become a singer. That's one of the reasons they broke up so early, because Jack Bruce was like, I'm the fucking singer and it's going well.
Yeah.
And Armand Erdogan actually said, I knew what I had. I had... The soul of this was coming from Eric Clapton, so they wanted to hoist Eric
But
Clapton.
I, you know, I would never call Eric Clapton like a great singer, you know?
No, but I did think his voice blossomed.
Sure. Oh, dude, when he's, especially if you, when you're listening to the unplugged versions and stuff, which is like, it's so raw.
Yeah.
I mean, Tears in Heaven, sung by like a really great singer, I don't think that song hits the same. No. Also, I don't think his son falling out of a window, you know, fucking, I got to read this Patreon thing. This is so fucked up.
Yeah.
I have to read it because you pay for the Patreon. Justin Nemec, I know you're a comedian here, so stop me if you know this one. What's the difference between a four-year-old and a bag of smack? Eric Clapton would never let a bag of smack fall out the window. That's a bad joke. I'm so sorry, everybody. But thank you for contributing to the Patreon, Justin, you evil, evil human being. What if I was like, he's actually one of our $50 sponsors? Like, keep writing him, Justin.
Yeah.
But yeah, not a great singer, but nah. I mean, arguably...
But not what he's known for. I mean, you listen to the guitar. You're like you said, you can hear what the know that's Clapton.
Is he in the top three guitar players of all time?
Top three?
Yeah,
depends on your taste. I mean, you want to go.
But I'm talking about everybody. We're doing a blanket thing here. And if you said the argument for Eric Clapton to be considered the greatest guitarist of all time, I mean, does he have the chops to put him up there with, you know, the elites like Jimi Hendrix and? And
Hendrix just because it was
it changed everything.
Changed everything. And Van Halen,
I would say,
changed everything.
Yeah.
And now you got the third guy.
Is
the third guy going to be a blues guitarist like Clapton, or is it going to be Segovia? Is it going to be a country guy? Is it going to be fucking Les Paul?
I think you got to get now. I think you got to.
I think you need another genre. I think he's a victim of
the
genre.
I don't think that you, even though you mentioned those other two guys, one being Les Paul, even though he has a guitar named after him, I don't think you even put him in the conversation. It's like, I couldn't tell you one thing Les Paul's ever done.
And Jeff Beck.
That's something that, dude, people fucking love Jeff Beck.
Jeff Beck is different. The guy from Rage Against the Machine, his name
Tom
is
Tom Morello. Steve. Good buddy. He's the reason I'm voting on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right, but I'm saying an entirely different approach, you know? I mean, even if Steve Vai, it looks like when you see Steve Vai play the guitar, it's divine inspiration being channeled through human talent. He's just, and Clapton has this too, it's flowing. It's just flowing out of him. Stevie Ray Vaughan had it too. He played with a wound third string. You know what you got to do to bend a wound third string? You need leg muscles in your fucking finger.
Yeah.
You know, but then you get Alvin Lee was a great guitarist. I mean, you know, you get the guys that have that feel.
Yeah.
Albert King, you could hear Albert King. You could hear Albert King, you know, it's
any of the Kings could be in
Albert
there.
King. Yeah.
Freddie.
BB had a great line about, you know, when he plays a solo. He's like, you guys are so fast with it. I look at these notes as being very expensive, so I spend them sparingly, which I thought was great. You know why? Billy Gibbons used light strings on the guitars. BB King picked up his guitar, played it, put it down, looked at Billy Gibbons and said, son, why are you working so hard? And he put light strings on.
I love that.
That's
Slowhand too, right? That's how he became Slowhand.
Well, Slowhand is two stories from what I heard. Giorgio Grimalski, who was, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, he was managing the Yardbirds. And Eric could play very fast. And it was an ironic name that he gave him. And the other story I heard was when he would break a string, he would change, he wouldn't switch out guitars, he'd change it right in front of the audience during the Yardbird years.
Yeah.
So the English audience would just start slow clapping.
Yeah, that was one of the things I had there too.
It's like the scene at the end of the Coming of Age movie where the bully claps
it's
for the kid.
Can't Buy Me Love, dude.
Yeah.
It's Can't Buy Me Love. All right, let me see if I have anything else. Hold on. What's your favorite guitar lick from this record?
Mm. It's the solo in the core. I'm going back to the core.
You love the core.
I go back to that. I mean, the cocaine solo was good. Was, you know, it's iconic, but I got to go back to the solo in the core.
You love the core. Yeah. All right, hold on. Let's see. We got one more Patreon question. Because we already answered Ray.
Here's the thing about his angles. I will tell you this. Back to the top three. I'll tell you this. The thing about Clapton solos, when I heard them, they were little pieces of music. They weren't just like a reiteration of the melody. You know, it wasn't just a variation. It was a fucking event.
Sure.
So, you know, that was... So, as far as the top three goes, he's right there. So, my answer is he's right there.
He's right there. All right. So, Ray, Engel, your question, I feel like we already answered it. Is Clapton really God? He's not, because there's only one God, and that, of course, is Tim Curry. Alan Jameson.
He's a deity. I'll give you this.
He's definitely a deity. He's definitely up at like Notre Dame in one of those stained glass things. Clapton was using, Alan Jameson, Clapton was using musicians almost exclusively from Tulsa, Oklahoma at this time, which had a significant influence on him stylistically. Jamie Oldacker, Carl Rattle, and Dickie Sims all came from the Tulsa Sound School, which included his hero, J.J. Cale.
Yep.
These guys provided the vibe to his 70s output, and he was as much a sideman to them as a band leader. So here's the question. Without these guys specifically, is it possible that Clapton would not have had the career resurgence that his album and subsequent ones in the 70s gave him? So in other words, is it wrong to say his band were most important players on this record rather than Clapton himself?
Yeah, I would say yes, because he leaned on them. He pushed them forward. He was, you know, by his own admission, he was drunk and stumbling through it. And he said his playing suffered from it. So in answer to the question, yeah. And I would even hazard the guess, the producer, Glyn Johns, made the best he could out of it. Glyn Johns also made Who's Next, because Townsend couldn't see the music. The songs were extraordinary. He couldn't see it.
Yeah.
You needed someone outside. It's hard to paint the picture when you're in it.
No, that makes sense.
You know? So I would, not only would I say the band, I would say Glyn Johns as well.
Sure. All right, rapid fire, and then we'll get you out of here.
Okay.
I mean, it was so funny. You were like, I was like, this will take an hour, and then we're like,
just two idiots.
You're coming back. Just know that you'll be back many, many times.
I want to do a Revolver.
Right, that's six and a half more years.
I don't know. You got the list.
It's in the top 10.
We're in 300.
This is number 325. I can't believe I've gotten this far. All right. I ask every guest these questions.
Sure.
First question, favorite song on the record.
I'm going to say the chorus. Going to piss you off.
Come on, man. Really?
All right. I'll tell you what.
If that's yours, let it be yours.
I'll tell you what.
I feel like you're just doing that just because I poo-pooed everything after track three.
No, you didn't. Because I kind of agree with you. But I wanted to give you reasons why.
Why is it? No.
Then.
Don't change it.
Go ahead.
That was your initial knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the core better than the first three records?
Because I've heard the first three records too many times.
Okay. I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Lay Down Sally. Lay Down Sally. I was on the airplane yesterday.
Like, I get it.
Chicken, boom, jam. Lee's favorite song on the record.
I'm sorry, Don Williams. It's We're All the Way. It doesn't. And then Peaches and Diesel.
Peaches and Diesel.
Yeah. Don Williams,
goes,
Tulsa Time. Love Tulsa Time. I'm going with Peaches and Diesel.
All right. What song on this record would you fuck to?
Wonderful Tonight.
Yeah, I know. But then I'll follow it up with Peaches and Diesel because, you know, that's when I'm getting up.
That's
getting
it.
The orange juice. Like, you good?
That's when you need a reason to leave.
That's like I'm trying to get her to go. I'm like, all right, get out of here.
This will get her out.
And I guess this question, we've talked about it throughout the whole podcast, but does this record deserve to be on the 500 greatest albums list?
Yeah, but I don't think it deserves to be this high.
You think it should be D? I do too.
I think it should be. I think you acknowledge what the three singles it did, but I don't think it deserves to be in the 300s.
I agree with what you're saying. I personally don't know. I feel like when we're talking about the greatest albums, and I get the idea that sometimes, you know, a couple songs are so big that they're like, all right, well, they make the rest of these mediocre songs, you know, a part of this great record because of these songs that are so great on it. I personally think when you're saying the greatest record of all time, or you're putting in a conversation, the whole album needs to be great.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it has to be great now because of the delivery system of music. These were events. You know, when I got an album, it was an event.
Yeah, I remember.
It was, I'm staying days in this. I'm looking at the cover. I'm reading the liner notes.
Yeah.
And the structure of it, it was very important too. Zeppelin IV is probably...
perfect.
Almost. The switch I would do is the end of side one, you put the levee. Because the levee gets washed out from Stairway to Heaven. You know, because you Stairway to Heaven is just like,
oh my God. You end with Stairway.
You end the thing with Stairway to Heaven, and you put the levee at the end of side one. Other than that, I mean, because the way it starts with Black Dog, that's a perfect beginning.
Perfect beginning. Rock and roll. Yeah. Fucking, yeah, man.
Just great. I mean, so structure of the album.
How would you restructure this? Didn't you say you had that?
I had the restructure of it. Yeah.
How's your restructure?
I would end with, you're going to hate me. I would end with the, I would put something in the second position after Cocaine. So I would rework the Next Time You See Her with the story song with another verse. I would put that there. Then I would put Wonderful Tonight. Then I would put Lay Down Sally for the reason I said it trails off. So it makes you feel psychologically like there's something more coming.
Yeah.
Then the next one, you got to rewrite a couple of songs. Because you got to write a couple of songs and end with the core. That's what you got to do.
You love the core, man.
I just tell you, it's a long jam song that it's fucking exciting. There's elements in there.
I'll give you that.
The sax player, Mel Collins, he's right on the edge of breaking. You hear that sax. He's right on the edge of breaking. He's taking it up to that limit. I mean, that's just... And Clapton's coming in with this Coltrane-esque kind of approach to the solo to match the energy and take you somewhere else. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
Like I said, the effect on the keyboard just bumped me a little bit.
Well, I agree with almost every single thing that you said today. And you, because you are one of my favorite people.
Ah, as are you, my friend.
Promote away, please. Anything you want to promote?
The Adam Farr podcast, it's called 30 Minutes You'll Never Get Back. A bunch of music guests, a bunch of car guys, a bunch of actors, a bunch of comics. It's a lot of fun. Please check it out. I got a special on YouTube. It's called It's Scary in Here. It's free. So check it out. Give a brother a thumbs up. And I got tour dates on my schedule.
Yeah,
I really was looking forward to this, my friend.
Well, what's great was that there were a million records that you could have done. Mm-hmm. And then I was just like, you're doing Slow Hand.
Yeah.
You will be back.
Excellent.
100% you will be back. And I want to give you a shout out. She said, by the way, will you please send my regards? So Emily Kagan.
Yeah.
Emily wants, she said, give my regards to Adam tomorrow. My mom, Claudia, booked you on Arsenio back in the day. And your sister, they've gone to see you. And they just wrote in all caps, we love him.
As I do you. Thank you so much. You know who I saw when I did Arsenio?
Who?
Billy Preston.
Really?
Billy Preston was playing the keyboards in between. I was fucking blown away.
Then there's a good question because somebody wrote, does Billy, who deserves to be the fifth Beatle, Billy or Eric?
Billy. Played on more songs. Saved the recording thing. If you look at the Get Back documentary, I'll tell you the moment to look back. The first time he sits in and he plays the keyboards on I Got a Feeling, there's a shot of his hands on the keyboard and there's a next shot of Paul's face that's just, he just fell in love with, his eyes just got so big and he just fell in love with Billy right there with that sound.
You know, I watched it, but I was watching it after a 4-day, I think I was gone in Vancouver for 5 days. And then there's a girl that I've been seeing and she came over and we just went right into bed. And after the first session, I was like, you want to put something on? And we put on fucking the documentary. Yeah. I hadn't seen it. And it's like, they're playing something. And I'm like, oh, this is getting me a little hot and bothered. And we roll over, we start messing around because something's playing. But then we forgot that it's a documentary. So in the middle of the song, it stops and it's like, I'll play whatever you want me to play, John. I won't play at all. It's like, okay. And then it's George Martin. That was the sound that we, and I'm just like, car, car. This is great, dude. This is great.
I had so much fun. You know what was really cool?
What?
But fan of the podcast, a guy named Peter, sent me a cup. You know the cups they were drinking out of, the mugs?
Yeah.
That ugly brown and black. I don't know how the hell he found it. He found the mugs they were drinking at it.
Really?
And he sent it to me. He goes, just thought you might like to have a cup of tea with the lads. I'm like, oh, how great is that? He's a fellow geek.
The fans of, I mean, you know it from doing podcast. And you've, I mean, like, yeah. being like, I mean, you've been on one of my favorite podcasts of all time, the Tony Kornheiser podcast, which I listen to religiously. It's like the people that love
this, the 500, mm-hmm. your podcast, Tony's, whatever it is. Like, once they get there, like, they're fans for fucking, and they come up to me after shows and just I always want to quit this. Constantly want to quit it.
I was going to say, the fucking work, I know the work I put into mine.
Yeah.
And this work is, and
you- Well, it's Adam. It's Adam and Jeremiah and Peter. They do the majority. But it's still, because I just listen to it. I listen to the music, and now we just talk, and I book people that I love and I respect. So it's like, it's just easy to do it. But man,
a
lot of work, just doing a podcast weekly. And it's when you meet those fans that are out there and they send the questions or they join the Patreon or just come to the shows. It means the world. It really does. And a guy will come up to me and he'll be like, you know, you talk about your friend Angelo and how you lost Angelo and that's why you do this. He's like, well, I lost my son a year ago. And because of your podcast and what you say about Ange, it's helped bring me out of that. And then you're like, God damn it. I can't quit.
Yeah. That's cool. It's this kind of shit that brings people together. So keep doing it, man.
You'll be back.
All right, bro. All right,
bless you, bro. What did I tell you? What did I tell you? The one and only Adam Ferrara. Follow him on all social media at Adam Ferrara. Listen to his podcast, the Adam Ferrara Podcast. And for all things Adam, go to adamferrara.com. That's ADAMFERRARA.com. For listener shout out this week, I'm going with one of my favorite people. The reason that this show keeps going and we have such incredible guests, our booker, Emily Kagan. Emily has been with us since right before the pandemic started. And without her, I don't know if I would continue doing this podcast. Emily, thank you from the bottom of my heart for getting me such incredible guests, for being such a sweet, cool person, and for just being a part of this journey. Follow her at Emily Kagan, EMILYCAGAN. She's at 374 followers. When this comes out, I want to see her at 500. Hook her and me up. Now, we just listened to Eric Clapton from 77 for new music. We have Philip Sace. I hope I said that right. S-A-Y-C-E. He's Welsh and he's Canadian. He's a bunch of stuff. You're listening to the song Burning off his 2021 album, Spirit Rising, and you can find the links on our website, the500podcast.com. And we want to play your songs, so send us your songs to 500podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you put the album and artist that influenced you in the subject line. Next week, we've got our first David Bowie! Bam, 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 bam. You remind me of the Babe. What Babe? The Babe of the Power. What Power? The 76 record. What album? Station 2. Station. Gang, gang. So listen to it. Do your homework, y'all. I'm
100. Keeping it fleecy for the Fleece Nation on the 500.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Next Chapter Podcasts.